the report that was published yesterday is, as you've outlined us in your introduction, Greg, a shocking report. It describes an experience for men and women who were subject to abuse by one person, but it also is the result of failings on the part of the system, the model of service, the management and leadership that all contributed in some way to letting people down. And for that, the HSE absolutely apologises to those men and women who were affected, to the families of people who were let down, and who in turn, by not being told about what was happened, were denied the opportunity to advocate for and to safeguard their family member, and to the staff who did try to improve things and were raising issues, and they weren't heard. And that was unacceptable then, as it is now. It is a report that describes a poor service at that time.
Talk to me about how this was reported. So staff raised concerns with whom? And talk to me about that, what we've learned from this investigation. So staff saw there were problems. We know that nurses were concerned as far back as 2008. So talk to me. So staff raise an issue to whom? Not necessarily the individuals, but what? Is that to management of the centre at that point?
So at that point, what seems to have been the practice, Greg, was that concerns were raised at multidisciplinary meetings.
Now, what does that mean? Who's at the multidisciplinary meetings?
So you might have had a psychiatrist or nursing staff or care staff who were involved. There may have been the manager at the meeting.
Are there minutes of those meetings?
I would expect that there are.
Were they looked at as part of this report?
They were reviewed as part of the report.
Okay,
yes.
So that multidisciplinary meeting, concerns were raised at that point. Were the concerns raised at that meeting then raised further up the line?
In some instances, it would seem that they were, and in other instances...
Okay, so in the instances that they were, where were they raised to at that point? Regional HSE management?
Well, I think that's part of the review. It points out that the management and leadership of the service was failed, and that's at all levels.
But there was a point. There was a point where decisions were made, right, that nothing really needed to be done other than moving this individual around. At what level up the HSE chain would that decision have been made?
I think that was probably made at the local service management level primarily.
So do we know if local service management had raised the concerns that were elevated to them above that?
There's mixed evidence that would have happened, Greg.
Well, and if the evidence that it were, how far up did it go then? What's after regional? Is it up then? Is it national?
Regional to national, but these issues would seem that they were managed within primarily the management structures within Donegal primarily at that time. And I think just to recall as well that for some of that time, the structures are somewhat different to what they are now. But I think the important point.
We're not talking about 1,000 people here. We're talking about then a group of people. What is being done then to sort of find out who ultimately is responsible and hold them to account in an appropriate way?
Absolutely.
Well, what's happening there?
So the National Director of Human Resources has commissioned a scoping exercise.
What does that mean?
That means that they're reviewing the circumstances, the report and the evidence at the moment with a view to making a decision on what the next steps would be in relation to disciplinary action. You'd appreciate, Greg, that these things are very much required to be undertaken in the context of due process, and I don't want to say anything
No, of course, we don't want to compromise that at all.
But just to assure people that there is a process going on.
And can obviously disciplinary action then can only be taken against people that are still in the employment of the HSE, is that correct?
That's correct.
So in the interim, whilst this scoping exercise is ongoing, probably be January at the earliest, if people were to leave the HSE, then they would be outside the scope of that scoping exercise.
That's correct.
Right,
they'd be outside the scope of it in the context of if there was a disciplinary process to follow.
Right, so time's of the essence then.
It is, of course. Absolutely.
And that, when will that scoping exercise be concluded?
I think that it's anticipated that it would be concluded by the end of January.
Are there any other instances like this anywhere else under your control that we don't know about yet? This was came to light because of a whistleblower. Are there any other reports that are sitting somewhere that haven't been published?
To the best of my knowledge, there aren't. Obviously, there are always processes underway, Greg, where there may be concerns that are raised, but I'm not aware at this point of anything on this scale or the numbers of people involved or at the scale of a lack of response, I think, appropriate response, as would have been reflected in the Brandon report.
In 2008, concerned nurses got together, a group of them. They signed a letter out of desperation. They were desperate. They pleaded for Brandon to be moved, and they were ignored. Why was that?
I honestly don't know. I've been involved in disability services for 30 years. And my experience has always been that where concerns are raised by staff that I've been working with, or where I as a staff myself have raised concerns, that they were responded to appropriately. Clearly in this instance they weren't. That can only, to my mind, demonstrate major failings on the part of management in responding to something that was should have been of the utmost concern and should have elicited the most immediate response.
Have you been able to then determine a motivation for the lack of response? What was the motivation? Why were these activities ignored? Like, what was the motivation? Was it
I don't want to say something that might interfere with any process that's going on, Greg, as you'd appreciate. So I can't speculate as to the motivation for why somebody did or didn't act in the way that they did.
Okay.
But I think in general, where incidents like this happen in disability service or any other service, they're often characterised by people not taking on the responsibility that they should have in the role that they carry, and acting in a way that is proactive and demonstrates the leadership, but also demonstrates the commitment to the rights of people to, in the first instance, be safely supported within a service, and secondly, that service is working to support them to have the best life that they can have.
I don't know if you're aware, but on Highland Radio a number of years ago, and we have the tape, a senior manager denied there was any sexual abuse of the facility when asked on air. Is that acceptable?
I'm not aware of the particular instance, other than that my understanding was that at the time the person thought they were answering a question relating to a HICWA report. Obviously and clearly there was sexual abuse in that service, and it affected many people, and any communication to the contrary was incorrect.
Did all families get view of this report before it was published online?
We had a communication plan, Greg, that involved making contact with the families of those affected by the report and other families in advance of publication. And we agreed with individual families to get them copies of the report in advance.
So all of them were offered copies and received them in advance?
But I do understand from media coverage today that there was at least one family that didn't happen for.
Is that acceptable?
I know from colleagues in CHO1 who were leading out on this work that they made every effort to contact families if there was a failing. I apologise unreservedly to that family. It wasn't our intention to not have a circumstance where families had the opportunity to access.
Now, obviously, this is of huge distress for families, but particularly accessing the report, viewing the report, the facts, although there was no all of them, perhaps not all of them, were laid bare for them to see. What supports were given to them in advance of this publication and subsequent to it? What supports were offered to them? Do you know?
Okay, so families that were being contacted in advance of publication were being contacted by psychology and social workers who would be familiar with the families and familiar to them. Families have been offered contact details to liaise with psychology support, and there are a number of managers who are also available to provide support or answer any questions that families may have. And those supports will continue to be available to families on whatever basis that they wish them to be available to them.
If a staff member now goes to their manager in a similar setting and says, I've got concerns about what might be happening, what is the procedure now?
The procedure is that there is a requirement for that manager to act on the information that they have. In addition,
Was that not the case previously?
Well, it was, but just in addition, there's also measures like protected disclosure. The safeguarding teams are in place. So there are additional measures that are in place today. But I would say, given that I have this opportunity, if you don't mind, to say to any staff in disability services, anywhere who's listening to this, that if you have a concern on anything, please use the mechanisms that are there. Report it to your manager, report it to the safeguarding teams. And if it's not being acted on, then to use things like protected disclosure. But I'd also say to managers that it is your obligation, first and foremost, to do everything you can to safeguard people. And where a concern is brought to your attention, it's your obligation, your responsibility, and your duty to act on it.
Like, if someone raises a concern now, or even in this historic, not historic actually, but in this case that we're talking of here, right? Management above the regional management, you know, there can't be any plausible deniability here. Were they going in and asking questions? Do we know if concerns were raised with the next tier up of management? Did they pursue them? You know, like, how can people be satisfied that those who are responsible for this at all levels, not just because you don't know, because that's not good management not to know either, that people will be held to account for this? Because until that happens, this may continue to happen elsewhere, because again, the HSE just takes the flak for it across the entire service, right? People need to know that ultimately people will be held responsible. And, you know, maybe it's not possible through the current regulations that are now, that retirement can't insulate you from punishment.
Well, again, look, I can't comment on some of what you're asking me, Greg, because it just falls outside my remit. What I can say to you is that in terms of a HR process, there is that has commenced and is in train, and just need to let that work its way through. I think in terms of reporting now and just how things are recorded and tracked, I think first of all, where safeguarding concerns arise, they do go to the safeguarding teams in each CHO. They are tracked and monitored for follow-up by those teams, and there are recording and reporting systems into the national oversight teams and the national management structure. Mm-hmm. So we do have systems in place. Equally, we're able to use our systems to monitor and track information, so that, you know, that there are national performance processes in place to manage and to intervene if we're not satisfied that adequate measures are being taken in response to concerns.
I mean, whatever about local management, the HSE as a whole, at its very highest levels, were responsible for delaying the publication of this report. Some would feel that it actually took it being highlighted in the Dáil for any of this report to be published. The minister herself was told that the report would not be made available to her. That's this year. Explain that. Why was that happening?
Well, I think maybe to say a couple of things on it. First of all, the HSE was intent to be as transparent as possible with publication of the report that was published yesterday. A lot of the discussion has been around the publication of the full report as opposed to
the summary
version that was published yesterday. And I suppose the decision making in relation to what to publish was influenced by the understanding of the overall national independent review process, which is founded on people being able to participate in this in a confidential manner. It's really important for us to have a process like the NIRP process that allows us to learn, to get the kind of report that we published yesterday that details the findings and the recommendations.
So when was this report concluded?
The final report was submitted in, June or July.
Yeah, so what took from June to July for it to be published on the last day of the Dáil sitting after a public outcry?
Well, I think that we needed to consider the report. We needed to make sure that we had responses in place to it.
But the responses are that you can't really talk about it, scope and exercise. That's what all of you guys being sent out to the media are saying, the exact same thing.
Yeah, but I think there's a lot of other work going on as well, Greg. There is a strategic review, a strategic steering group in place, which is overseeing the implementation of the recommendations. There is a focus on the service to do a very systematic service improvement plan. And there's also a lot of work going on to develop an approach to develop services and to implement the recommendations. So the HR and the disciplinary process is one important aspect of it, but there are also other important aspects of the recommendations that are in train as well.
Now, obviously, I think there's 18 victims have been identified or covered in this. There are other families that believe or feel that their family members may have been victims. What has been done to examine that? What supports are being given there?
Okay, so we are examining records at the moment. That will be completed in January. And if there are any concerns that need to be raised with any individual or family, we will do that at that time.
Families want, some families at least, I can't speak for all of them, but a couple that have contacted us want the full report published as soon as possible. When will that happen?
Okay, it's not the intention of the HSE to publish the full report.
How will we know then what actually went on?
Well, I think the report that was published yesterday sets out in some detail, Greg, what did happen. It does set out the abuse that happened. It does set out the numbers of people that were involved in it. It's very clear in terms of setting out the findings about the contributing factors.
So why wouldn't we see the whole report,
Bernard?
Why wouldn't we see the full report? Why, if we are to have a trust and faith in these services, we need to see everything?
Well, I think there are two things. We also want trust and faith in a process that elicits the type of report that we got yesterday and that allows us to have the type of learning at the depth and quality of what NIRP produced. And we don't want to transgress the process that's there in order to achieve that.
With all due respect, the process, this has been going on now for a very, very, very long time. Maybe publish it and change the process then so people know what's going on.
Well, look, I think that the risk here is we want... Unfortunately, there may be events in other parts of the health and social care services in the future where we need a NIRP process that people engage in fully, share all of their information honestly and with the integrity of a process that can assure them that the learning, which is the first and foremost requirement of the NERP process, that we can achieve that to the maximum benefit.
I mean, obviously, primarily, these victims were failed. Brandon was failed. But a word from you to the staff that the stress this would have had on them, they tried to get this sorted. They had the care of the patients to their forefront. They were ignored, shut down, claims of bullying, some of them probably not in work anymore over the head of this. That is a group of people that would never put themselves on a par or ahead of the victims. But I haven't really heard much said about them since. What is your message to those staff members that did everything they felt that they actually could to put an end to this?
Well, I think what I'd say is, first of all, I'd apologise to them as well, Greg. I think, as you say, many staff worked really hard, tried to do the right things, and the system failed them as well. So I wholeheartedly regret that that was the experience. We have thousands of staff working in disability services across the country. They are very committed to the work that they do. They often work in very challenging environments to support people to have good lives, to participate in their communities, to work at and deliver reforms in how services are organised and delivered. And when they are let down by management or policy or lack of adequate training and support, we're letting them down. And by extension, we're also letting down the people that we support ultimately.
Okay. If anyone, this scoping exercise, finds anyone responsible, and we're not looking to compromise that in any way, shape or form, what sanction is available? Like, what could the punishment be to anyone identified to have been responsible for allowing this to happen?
Well, look, okay, I think the best way maybe that I could answer that is to say that there is a trust and care policy in place which outlines the range of sanctions that are there in the event of any staff member being found to have breached.
What is the most severe sanction?
Dismissal is the most severe sanction.
So someone could be sacked?
That applies to any disciplinary process.
And that is it. So in other words, people might, if I were involved in this, sure, I have a couple of months to retire anyway and avoid any of that. That's the greatest sanction that's there. Can there be any impact on pensions or entitlements?
I'm really outside my scope.
I
couldn't answer you, Greg. I don't know.
Okay. Any final words before we wrap it up?
Look, this is a terrible report in terms of the content of what it's describing. People were failed, families were failed, and staff were failed. But it's also a report that makes very strong recommendations about what needs to happen to address this and also to prevent it. And all I can do is apologise again to all those affected, but also give assurance that we are working as hard as we can to implement the recommendations of the report.